participant or moderator code, followed by the pound key. Please say your name, followed by the pound key.
John Kozlowski. Kozlowski.
Thank you, sir. Are you a participant or are you counsel for someone?
I am just here to listen as a moderator for David Tulis.
Okay. Are you counsel? I just need to know how to put your attendance, sir. This is the court reporter, sir.
Right. I understand. I wouldn't say counsel, just an observer.
Okay.
My understanding that this is the appropriate way for an observer to be.
Yes, yeah, sir. I'm just asking so I know how to put your name
understand.
Okay.
I'm going to put you all on a brief hold, and Chancellor will pick up, and she will ask everyone to identify themselves, okay?
Thank you.
Allotted to him by the rules, 30 days plus 3 with mail service. I visited the court January the 7th, Thursday, Your Honor, to examine the record, and there's nothing in the file on the service to Governor Lee that contradicts what the record has in there from me. It is alleged in the court's approved order entered January the 4th to be the service date for Governor Lee, responded Lee to be October 26th. And the reason this hearing has to be in person is because I'm demanding to see before the court and have the court look over the material proof of this alleged fact. I object, Your Honor, to the hearing being by phone, and also I object that I cannot see this material. And so I'd like, would you give me leave to discuss this evidence, Your Honor, this record? Can we do that in this discussion here?
To begin with, Mr. Tullis, you inaccurately stated the filing date. The filing date of your motion is January 4th. Secondly, you've admitted you've been up to the court to see the record. The record is not closed. It's open. And thirdly, what you're arguing has already been argued. So, no, you're seeking a second bite of the apple, which is the court found neither respondent was in default. Now, do you want to argue this motion that you asked for in-person hearing?
Well, I'm doing that now by highlighting the fact that while I have inspected the record, I have an order, Your Honor, that makes reference to another record that I have not seen and that has not been given to me about Respondent Lee's receipt of service. And the receipt of service, as the record shows, is October the 6th, and not as your order has it, October 26th. Where, Your Honor, does October 26th come from? That is a date. There's material that I have not seen. The record does not show that date. And so somehow the court has excused Governor Lee being in default as to the rules for 30 days to answer, Your Honor.
All right. And again, I've already ordered that he was not in default. You can take that up on appeal, but you're re-litigating the same issue. And the record is open. Whatever the record says is what the record says.
Well,
that you don't have to come, sir. Don't interrupt me. It's difficult. Don't interrupt me. I'm ruling. Do you want to argue whether you're entitled to an in-person hearing other than they're in default? That's already been litigated. This is a new motion.
Well, and yes, ma'am, I understand, but the Constitution requires that the courts be open.
Okay.
And that is to be that they are to be physically open in their buildings so that people, common people, rich people, poor people, people with bones, people without bones, can come and attend to watch the operation of justice and in your court of equity. And we have in the opinion from the Supreme Court Richmond Newspapers versus Virginia an excellent diagnosis of the problem of closed courts. If courts are closed, people can't be sure that justice is being reached in criminal matters and also in civil matters. And I would say that the order to close your court today, Your Honor, is premised on the fraud that the record of this case entered October the 2nd in your court. Fraud in all around as regards the danger of this virus and the failure of the governor to obey 68-5104. So there's not a lawful cause to have the court closed today, Your Honor. That's my argument for my motion orally written that you got in writing why this hearing needs to be in person.
Okay, thank you. All right, response, Ms. Kleinfeld, I'll start with you.
Yes, Your Honor. So, respectfully, there is not a constitutional claim here, whether we're talking about under the First Amendment or Article 1, Section 17 of the Tennessee Constitution. Both of those stand for the proposition that the courts are to be open to provide a remedy, to provide a cause of action if someone has been injured. The courts have never construed either provision to mean that the courts have to be physically open. And in this instance, Your Honor, the court is operating under the order that has been put down by the Tennessee Supreme Court with respect to how courts are to be operated in light of COVID-19. There is not a situation here where the courts have been closed, as evidenced by the fact that I believe there are at least four individuals who are neither parties nor counsel of record in this proceeding who are on the phone and have been able to participate in this proceeding. So there's really not a constitutional claim here for the hearing to be held in person, physically in person. Factually, the hearing is at the court, that this proceeding has not been closed by the court. Instead, the court is operating in accordance with the Tennessee Supreme Court's order.
Anything else?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Milling, I'll allow you to respond as well.
Your Honor, my argument is going to be exactly the same as Ms. Kleinfelter's, but I would add to that Mr. Tullis posted on his Facebook, I don't remember which one it was, he has several, but he posted on some website that he's a part of the phone number and the access code for people to be involved, so it would appear that the people who want to observe this hearing are here observing this hearing.
All right.
Question.
Sorry?
Question. Is it possible for people to join this hearing at any time in the course of moments or minutes that it lasts? Or do they have to come in at the beginning?
No,
it's barred?
No, it's open all day. All right, the court's ready to rule now. The court is ruling on this preliminary motion filed by Mr. Tullis to vacate hearing order and for hearing under Constitution. What Mr. Tullis stated as grounds in his motion is that he's entitled to an in-person hearing because of the January 11, 2021 order of the Supreme Court, which states that proceedings directly related to the COVID-19 public health emergency are among those exceptions to the suspension for in-person proceedings. What the court finds is that, and I'll read it directly, this is the Supreme Court's order entered December 22nd, 2020, which states the following are exceptions to the suspension of in-person court proceedings directly related to the COVID-19 public health emergency. The court discerns that these are matters where the government imposes a quarantine on someone or someone is brought before the court for violating that quarantine, because all of the exceptions to the suspension of in-person court proceedings are matters where someone's rights are potentially restricted by the state or third party without due process through an emergency order. In other words, they are hauled into court against their will. Here, the relator has not been hauled into court against his will. Rather, the relator has initiated this petition. This is not a private hearing, as he states in his motion. This is a public hearing. Anyone can access my courtroom virtually by using the information that's posted outside of my courtroom door, which is the telephone number and the access code. As evidence of this, there are members of the public listening into this. This has been posted since March of last year, and it's also posted at other parts on the third floor of the courthouse where my courtroom appears. And we have people attend the hearing telephonically on occasion. Also, for instance, if I have a 10 o'clock hearing and a 10:30 hearing, and my 10 o'clock hearing goes over, the people on the 10:30 hearing sit and listen to the completion of the 10 o'clock hearing. This is an open proceeding. This is, now as to specifically this hearing today, this is not an emergency hearing to which Mr. Tullis has been summoned into the court against his will. Neither the state nor any third party filed the action against Mr. Tullis. Relator filed this writ of mandamus on October 2nd, 2020, and requested an expedited hearing. I said it as quickly as I could, as soon as service was obtained on the defendants and time for them to respond. The governor filed a motion to dismiss. Ms. Barnes requested 1 week to file her motion to dismiss, so the court set both motions to dismiss to be heard.
time to the telephonic hearing. And then he files an objection to the telephonic hearing on January 4th. The reason I said it telephonically in December was out of discretion. It was because I was not accepting any testimony. I did not have to observe the demeanor of witnesses. I did not have to determine their credibility. This is merely argument on questions of law. The court can consider this telephonically. However, now, after that order was entered, the Supreme Court has entered a new order which states that, and this is paragraph 2 of the order entered December 22nd, 22, proceedings, all in-person proceedings in all state and local courts in Tennessee shall be suspended through the close of business on Friday, January 29th, 2021, subject to certain exceptions. So now, we're not allowed to have an in-person proceeding on this. It must be done telephonically. So the court rules, as a matter of law, that Mr. Tullis is not entitled to an in-person proceeding on these motions to dismiss on the or on his petition for mandamus. Just a minute, I'm getting my page. So the motion for an in-person proceeding filed by Mr. Tullis is denied. I find as a matter of law, this is not the type of exception to the order that can be heard in person. Ms. Kleinfelter, as a prevailing party under the local rules, will you prepare that order for both respondents?
I'll be glad to, Your Honor.
All right, now let me get to a second part of the motion. While I determine as a matter of law that Mr. Tullis is not entitled to an in-person proceeding on these motions to dismiss his petition for mandamus, I understand that you could make an oral motion, and you may be doing that today, for an in-person proceeding that could be set in a time frame when the suspension order is lifted, which would be after January 29th. Mr. Tullis, do you want to postpone this to a time when it can be in person, or do you want to go forward today telephonically?
I favor strongly that we go forward telephonically, Your Honor, because this is a peremptory writ 101 days after having been filed. So my expectation was that it be handled in 15 days, but I do not want to delay anything. I'm ready to proceed.
All right. Thank you. All right. Ms. Milling, will you prepare that order that the court offered to set this for an in-person hearing after the suspension order's deadline expired, but Mr. Tullis determined to go forward today telephonically?
I will, Your Honor.
All right. Now we're going to hear the business at hand, which is the two motions to dismiss. Ms. Kleinfelter, the governor filed his first, so I'll allow you to argue your motion, ma'am.
Thank you, Your Honor. And yes, we filed that motion, and so the court's had our motion and our memorandum for some time, and so I'm not going to...
I object, Your Honor. I object.
What, sir?
Your Honor, I object.
Mr. Tullis. I'm going to listen to this objection, and then I'm going to tell you, you cannot continue to interrupt people. We have a certain order. You will be heard in full, but
well,
each person gets to go in their turn.
Your Honor, let me ask a question, please. I have two motions to strike. Why is not the strike heard first, please?
Because it's a response to the motion to dismiss. It's a response. It was filed subsequent. You will be heard on that.
All right, I have a second objection, Your Honor. And I object that we're hearing from Mrs. Kleinfelter and Mrs. Milling et al. Because equity principles, whether fraud or notice or good faith or clean hands or other appropriate things such as due process, require, Your Honor, that the respondent hasn't earned the right to object or make any further statement in the action for mandamus relief that relator filed in absence of an answer to the admitted fraud in this case. We've had fraud in the record 101 days. they can't speak unless they address it, Your Honor. That's why I object to hearing either of these two parties.
All right. The objection's overruled. Ms. Kleinfelder, you may argue the motion to dismiss.
On what grounds?
That I've already ruled on it. You're relitigating the same issues. We're getting to the merits of your case now.
Well, we're getting to procedure. Their motions are
all procedural, Your Honor. Mr. Tullis, do not interrupt again. Ms. Kleinfelter, you may argue the motion.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we've raised a number of different grounds in our motion, Your Honor, as to why the petition for writ of mandamus should be dismissed. Some go to the issue of subject matter jurisdiction, and some go to the failure to state a claim. With respect to the subject matter jurisdiction argument, Your Honor, the argument there is that Governor Lee can only, when he has been sued in his official capacity, he can only be sued in Davidson County. And we've cited this is a matter when you're suing the governor in his official capacity, that is essentially a suit against the state of Tennessee. The Tennessee Constitution mandates that the state can only be sued where the General Assembly has directed, and the General Assembly has directed that with respect to state officials in particular, here we have the governor, that state officials are to be sued in their official capacity where they are located, i.e. the seat of state government, which is Davidson County. And the Tennessee Court of Appeals and the Tennessee Supreme Court have made it clear that this is not just a matter of venue, this is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. A suit against the governor in his official capacity outside of Davidson County is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction. A court outside of Davidson County would not have subject matter jurisdiction over that claim. And so for that reason, Your Honor, that reason alone, the petition against Governor Lee in his official capacity should be dismissed. With respect to the petition against Governor Lee in his individual capacity, Your Honor, it states that the petition states that it is against the governor in his individual capacity, yet the petition contains absolutely no allegations of any actions that the governor has taken in his personal capacity and seeks no relief against him in his personal capacity. Instead, it only refers to actions that the governor could have taken or actions that the petitioner believes that the governor should have taken in his capacity as the governor, not as a private citizen. And therefore, Your Honor, we would submit that the petition fails to state a claim against the governor in his individual capacity. And of course, to the extent that the court could construe the petition as asserting a claim against the governor in his individual capacity, then, of course, we're back to the venue issue. At that point, venue against the governor would be inappropriate in Hamilton County because the governor does not reside nor cannot be found in his individual capacity in the Hamilton County, and therefore under TCA 20-4-101A, venue would be inappropriate. So those are just sort of the preliminary grounds as to why that petition should be dismissed, Your Honor. Getting to the substance of the petition for a writ of mandamus, here the petition simply fails to state a claim. The case law is very clear. What a petitioner must establish in order to seek a writ of mandamus, because it is a form of relief that the courts have said will only lie to enforce a ministerial act or duty. It does not control, it cannot be granted to control a legislative or discretionary duty. And in order to be able to ask for and seek mandamus, a plaintiff must establish that they have their right to relief is clearly established. And two, that the defendant has a clear duty to perform the act at issue. And three, that there's no other plain, adequate, and complete method of obtaining the relief. And even where there is a clear legal right established, the Tennessee Supreme Court has held that the issuance of a writ of mandamus is still within the trial court's discretion. What we have here, Your Honor, are allegations that the petitioner
duties imposed by Tennessee Code Annotated 685-104 and seeks a writ directing the governor to, quote, faithfully follow the law and, quote, to keep accurate records. And we cited numerous paragraphs in the petition where that relief, that those allegations are asserted and that relief is sought. But, Your Honor, when you look at the statute in question, 685-104, that statute doesn't even mention the governor. It contains no reference to the governor, any duty of the governor, any action that the governor is supposed to take. Instead, it speaks to local health authorities the authority of local health authorities in their discretion to take action to quarantine individuals. But it contains nothing in there that, one, establishes a clear right of relief in the petitioner, and two, that imposes any duty on the governor, much less a clear duty on the governor to take any action. And for those reasons, Your Honor, the petition on its face fails to state a claim for a writ of mandamus and should be dismissed. And we cited a recent case out of the Tennessee Court of Appeals in which the Court of Appeals upheld the dismissal of a petition for writ of mandamus, in which that petition failed on its face to establish a clear right of relief in the petitioner and a clear duty that was imposed upon. In this instance, the petitioner was seeking to impose a writ of mandamus on the General Assembly, on both the both houses of the General Assembly. That is the same situation that we have here, Your Honor. The petition simply on its face is sufficient and should be dismissed with respect to requesting mandamus relief. Now, the petition also appears, Your Honor, it's not clear, but it appears to also be seeking some sort of declaratory and or injunctive relief, in that it asks the court to declare that the governor has been acting outside the scope of his lawful authority and to set aside any and all orders or decrees imposed relative to COVID-19, Your Honor. And in that instance, this is a situation where the plaintiff lacks the standing to seek that declaratory and injunctive relief. And we've thoroughly briefed this in our response, I mean, in our motion, Your Honor. But bottom line here is that in order to have standing to seek that kind of relief, the plaintiff has to allege a concrete and particularized injury that is there's the three elements, Your Honor. It has to be a concrete, particularized injury. It has to be shown that it was fairly traceable to the conduct of the adverse party. In this instance, it would be the governor, and that it's capable of being redressed by a favorable decision of the court. The primary injury here, Your Honor, that the petition alleges is that the governor's not following the laws. He's not following the laws the way the petitioner believes that the governor should be following the laws. In particular, he's not complying with 685-104. But that's an injury, Your Honor, that is common to all the citizens of the state of Tennessee, not just the petitioner. And in fact, that's a position that is repeatedly asserted and alleged by the petitioner in his petition. Throughout the petition, he alleges that the respondents have harmed the relator and fellow Tennesseans, that the plaintiff and the state of Tennessee are being irreparably injured. Pretense of the respondents jeopardizes everyone in the state of Tennessee. And in particular, he specifically asserts that the Constitution and the laws of the state of Tennessee, such as Tennessee Code Annotated 685-104, have been and are being contravened, and rights granted or secured thereby are being infringed, unwarranted power exercised in an arbitrary and oppressive manner by the respondents, such as to justify the interference of this honorable court to prevent wrong and oppression. In essence, the petitioner is alleging that the governor is not following the laws the way that he believes the governor should be following the laws, and that is not sufficient to establish standing, as the Supreme Court stated in the ACLU versus Darnell case. Standing may not be predicated upon an injury to an interest that the plaintiff shares in common with all other citizens. And here, the petitioner's allegation that the governor failed to comply or to act in accordance with the Constitution and state law, and in particular 68-5104, is an injury that is shared by all citizens. And for that reason, Your Honor, to the extent that the petition can be construed as requesting declaratory and injunctive relief in addition to the mandamus, we would request that we submit that it should be dismissed for a lack of standing. Finally, there appears to be a claim for equitable compensation where the petitioner has asked for equitable compensation or reimbursement, indemnification, essentially a claim for damages against the governor. And of course, Your Honor, when the governor is being sued in his official capacity, that is, again, as I said earlier, a lawsuit against the state of Tennessee, and any claim for damages against the state of Tennessee or an official in their official capacity is barred by sovereign immunity, and clearly sovereign immunity applies here, as we have set out in our response. For all of those reasons, Your Honor, we would respectfully request that the motion to dismiss the petition be granted for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and for failure to state a claim. And unless the court has any questions, that's essentially it.
All right, thank you. Now, Mr. Tullis, this is your time to respond, argue your motion to restrike, object, whatever you want to do. Now is you have the floor, sir.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. For the record, for any appeal, consistent with the factual evidence in the petition, notwithstanding the boilerplate offered by both respondents, or inadequate order denying the motion to strike respondents' motion to dismiss for continuing fraud, which, and among other things, the challenged order's consequent with granting, if justice is to be done, needed to provide notice to show how the petition was insufficient and that this court, contrary to its actions today, provide the state on relation with an opportunity to amend any particularized inadequacy, then that relator refused or failed or could not amend, and to provide foundation for how this court can continue to allow fraud to infiltrate, subsist, and be subsidized in chancery and tolerated by equity principles, that despite the vast discretionary authority Your Honor granted an honorable court, these same requirements apply equally to the purported motions to dismiss, and this court is required to provide its valid foundation and notice for due process consideration that ultimately justice be done. Dismissal upon the otherwise inadequate, if not frivolous, motions of the respondents in admitted fraud and breach of duty, causing with evidence of record particularized irreparable harm to relator or the state of Tennessee on relation, is unwarranted and constitutionally invalid against the relator's rights to remedy for the particularized harm done to him by respondents in any capacity. The motion to dismiss is improper, being the fraud now admitted by respondents in choosing this route, the procedural route, has not been answered pursuant to equity principles, and the court is duty-bound to summarily and immediately issue the writ of mandamus that the respondent is compelled to obey the law and stop committing, or by omission, the irreparable harm, Your Honor, evidenced in the adequate petition, no lawful record existing to the contrary. And so just briefly, in introduction, I demand that justice be done in favor of the state of Tennessee on relation immediately, Your Honor. And now to the specifics of my motion to strike Mrs. Kleinfelter's labors. It's improper We are 101 days into an admitted violation of 685104. That is a fraud. Equity disallows fraud. It disallows breach of trust. It disallows oppression and violation of oath to stand unaddressed in this court. Actions by the respondent personally are addressed because his Social Security show, in defiance of the law, is done, I would think, in his personal capacity under color of law, not in his office. His office has no authority to ignore the statute and to declare a state of emergency. The motion to dismiss the state of Tennessee's claims on relation with prejudice is not particularized. It is not particularized, Your Honor. It does not answer to the fraud. And the motion that you have read and you've heard discussed now is from one who has no standing to argue anything, with unclean hands, admitting fraud, violating oath. There's no right of having law and notice not shine the light upon it that this case is doing. We are in a state of breach of public trust. There is no lawful title by Respondent Lee before this court for 101 days. There's no title either to the property of the people whom he has injured. There is no lawful excuse, and it's not a matter of discretion that we're dealing with here, as we'll discuss in a minute, I hope. There's no lawful excuse, no discretion in default in reply to his oath. He is 100% in the red, and if the court lets stand this motion, I would like to have an answer in writing as to what, and if I do, and if this motion survives in any way, Judge Cleaner, I would like at least 21 days to answer it. Continuing, the motion that I filed with the court is for, in the alternative, misjoinder. Dismissal is not proper, especially the bad faith claim that it be done with prejudice. The proper handling of this case is Chancellor Fleener wants to hear this alternative petition is misjoinder. The court lacks jurisdiction. As Mrs. Kleinfilter says, then Tennessee Code Annotated 16-1-116 is a misjoinder rule. It's also Rule 21. The proper handling of the Lee portion of this petition for writ of mandamus would be transfer. And she is arguing a venue privilege that deals with commissioners, but it seems that the courts, it's being argued that the courts hold that these rules on commissioners having been sued in Davidson County apply to the governor, though there are no governor cases that I'm aware of. And if it seems to apply to Respondent Lee, then I have a right to pursue this case and justice in Davidson County. So what I would say, Your Honor, that if there is no subject matter jurisdiction for propriety of my claims against him here in Hamilton County, that it be by transfer. And, Your Honor, if Lee is transferred, I would insist on the right in Davidson County to get the date of the filing there as of October the 2nd, not the date of the transfer, and that's pursuant again to 16-1-116. So that is my argument for dismissal. The case, in sum, Your Honor, if fraud is not addressed in a court of equity, which is Chancery's great jurisdiction, great godly power, then these procedural claims are improper, and this motion by Mrs. Kleinfelter should be stricken, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. As the moving party, Ms. Kleinfelter, you get the last word if you so choose. Do you need to respond? Ms. Kleinfelter, do you reply to?
No, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Oh. I had it on mute.
I appreciate that. It takes away with the background noise that way. All right.
No, Your Honor. I don't have any response to make. I think that our motion and the brief in support and argument fully address all the issues, unless the court has any questions.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. The court is going to take that matter under advisement and issue a written opinion. Now I'm going to hear the motion to dismiss of Ms. Barnes. Ms. Billing, this is your motion. You may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor. My motion is obviously very similar to Governor Lee's, or Ms. Barnes' motion is very similar to Governor Lee's, with a distinction, and that is, of course, that Ms. Barnes is situated in Hamilton County and is not the governor of the state, so certain things don't apply to her but apply to him. However, relative to the lack of standing, the petitioner's lack of standing, because of a non-particularized injury, the argument is the same. The petitioner has alleged that he shares in common with the rest of the citizens of the state of Tennessee the same injury. That, of course, is that is an indispensable element pursuant to American Civil Liberties Union of Tennessee versus Darnell. And of course, lack of that indispensable element, of course, defeats his request for a writ of mandamus. Also, in particular, with relation to Ms. Barnes, as it applies to 685104, which is the quarantine statute, the petitioner references this repeatedly relative to the MAPS directive. Well, in this case, not only does the lack of a particularized injury come into frame, but whether or not the petitioner has an individualized injury based on this statute also comes into play. He has not alleged such an injury, nor has he alleged that personally the provisions of 685104 have been applied to him relative to quarantine. Regarding a writ of mandamus as it being an extraordinary form of relief, and I am quoting from my brief here, it says, the law of mandamus in Tennessee is well settled. State ex rel Weaver versus Ayers, 756 Southwest 2nd, 217 at 220, Tennessee, 1988. Mandamus will only lie to enforce a ministerial act or duty and will not lie to control a legislative or discretionary duty. In this case, we have, understandably, the petitioner does not believe it to be true, but we have before us a pandemic where we have thousands of people being infected, or hundreds of thousands of people across the country being infected, thousands in the state of Tennessee, and thousands of people in the state of Tennessee have died. It is a undertaking that has not occurred, at least since I have been in the legal field, certainly I don't believe in my lifetime, that has occurred to this degree, and the discretion to issue a mask directive, that most certainly is discretionary and falls under this, meaning that a mandamus does not apply to address this issue. As Ms. Kleinfelter noted, the petitioner also appears to request damages. And of course, damages, to the extent that he's requesting damages from Ms. Barnes in her official capacity, that is actually a request for damages by Hamilton County. That falls under the auspices of this Tennessee Governmental Tort Liability Act, which is not a matter that would be heard in this court. Likewise, as to Governor Lee, he has asserted absolutely nothing about that within his petition that indicates that Ms. Barnes took any actions within her individual capacity whatsoever, making dismissal as to her as an individual appropriate. And I will wait for Mr. Tula's response for anything else, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Tullis, you may argue your motion to strike. You may argue an objection. You may argue in response. Whatever you choose to do.
Yes, ma'am. Just a moment.
Okay. Take your time.
May I speak as a participant just quickly?
No, ma'am.
People are trying to get in and they're not able to. They say it's full.
All right. It may be full, just like my courtroom gets full, too. And when it gets to capacity, we can't let other people in. Thank you. But I appreciate you letting us know that there are participants on the line who are in the public.
Just half a moment more, please, Your Honor.
Certainly.
Your Honor, this is Sheila Wilson, the court reporter. May I ask for her honor to, I suppose, let me know who the person was who spoke just a moment ago, since we're not on camera.
Jessica Hedgecock.
Thank you, ma'am.
That's up to you, ma'am, if you want to address that or not. I'm not going to require you to identify yourself. Thank you for asking me, Ms. Wilson. I understand that, but they don't have to identify themselves because I'm not letting them address the court, because this is only by argument by the lawyers representing the party in the case.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Tull.
In my argument to strike the Barnes motion for dismissal and the brief attached, I assert again that it's an improper motion, pretending to have a concern for procedure when the fraud that is in the record and not rebutted, which is disobedience of 685-104, is unaddressed. This is the fraud of disobedience, a black letter law that applies to everybody from the governor on down. Everybody involved in health and public health is bound by that law. That law, in sum, is not a matter of discretion. And so what I'd like to do, Your Honor, is in this discussion about the striking the Barnes motion is to defend the petition as sufficient, because we're hearing here that the petition is improperly using mandamus, that mandamus is not a remedy, and that I don't have standing. So these are all issues that are appropriate in a discussion about the Barnes brief and motion, and I would suggest, Your Honor, that the points, since these are similar defenses by two parties, that you understand while my words are directed upon her motion, they really are directed to both respondents together, but since this is an oral presentation, there's maybe some lack of specificity. But again, Your Honor, I demand that her motion be stricken as improper because it fails to account for fraud, and that's a violation of 685-104. That's not allowed in equity. It's not allowed to have a party with a duty, a known clear legal duty, to obey. Here we have the health administrator in Tennessee ignoring and having no proof of compliance with this statute, which has about five demands upon her and her office. This suit was filed when I determined as a fact that she had not once looked at this law, not once had any discussions about it, there were no reports under it, not a single item of evidence that she is obedient to this law. The key health law, the quarantine epidemic law in Tennessee, ignored by the respondent Barnes. And so that is fraud, that is deception, that is damage, and we are all damaged, and I'm property damage as well, and that will go to my discussion on standing, Your Honor. So what we have here with her brief is a demur and an evasion. A demur, we don't have demurs in Tennessee law, but that's what this is, and it is an evasion for now 101 days. To say that Mrs. Barnes is exercising discretion is simply frivolous. It is a frivolous argument. The motion is under color of a proper motion, and it is using this court with each day that passes without a ruling for mandamus. It is asking and demanding the court perpetuate the fraud of this whole top-down solution to the year's virus. I object to the court not demanding obedience immediately to 685104 or evidence of coming into compliance. The evidences, Your Honor, that I insist that you ask for, that they're in the process of obeying or they have plans to obey, maybe starting tomorrow, Your Honor, that this official plans to start looking at the law to see what it has in there for her to do. Because as I'm asserting, I have a due process right in her compliance with the statute. My due process right, as evidenced in my affidavit of damages, with my 5 points, those damages came to me because she ignored her duty. That statute is, figuratively speaking, a complexity thicket, and she has to go into that thicket and meet all of its obligations before she can do anything. That statute is binding upon her. There is no discretion, as I'll get to and talk about mandamus. There is no discretion, Your Honor, apart from obedience. Discretion does not operate contravening black-letter law. In the health law, the health statute, Title 58, binding a woman whose whole life as a nurse and a local official has been under that statute. You know that statute very well, and I would say that she's in her motion, she is not denying fraud, and she's not saying I'm misperceiving the job or that I'm misreading it. There is some suggestion that somehow I've just misread it, somehow this law, I'm applying it, and it really somehow didn't apply to her. And yet, Mrs. Barnes accepts my affidavit of complaint, the petition of 212 paragraphs, and she accepts without rebuttal, without putting me on the stand about my injuries, she accepts the affidavit. And that's her, in chancery, there need not be testimony in this case because the damages are particular and personal to me. And so the petition, Your Honor, is sufficient. That is my main point here. It is made in good faith. It accurately portrays the law, the duty, and the obligation of this official. It is proof of disobedience of legislative enactment. The people through the General Assembly passed this law, and she is in stark disobedience to the people's will through statute, which applies to her. And my case, my claims, are I would say, a brilliant light on corruption, fraud, roaches feeding on a stinking cancerous tumor dragging across the calendar of 334 days as of today, a rolling stock of constitutional violations and arbitrary and capricious acts by the boxcar. The Constitution has been violated multiple times. I'm leaving those points aside because I'm firing the people's tracer bullets, Your Honor, at the locomotive pulling this rolling stock, and that's this law and this official denying obedience and duty to this law. In her duty to obey this law, petitioner and the state on relation have their due process protection. We have protections in her duty, and I, as a representative of the public in Tennessee and in Chattanooga and Hamilton County, I have a right and I have a claim inequity upon Mrs. Barnes' performance. I have a right, Your Honor, I have title, I have interest in equity to know also from this court any inadequacy so that I can exercise my right to amend my petition. And now it's the propriety of mandamus. This case is justiciable under mandamus. In the action sought, I have a distinct injury. There's no rebuttal. There is a causal connection between the actions of the health director in Hamilton County and my injuries. dealing with the economy, the economic damages, and also the false threat of arrest. Redressability, that is very clearly in my favor as well. Mandamus, which is the one-sentence order directing her to obey the law, is redress. That solves my problem. That satisfies the state of Tennessee. Again, it is discretionary. If you look at Toussaint versus Memphis, 2001, very useful discussion, Your Honor, about mandamus. You can't use it to force, of course, a discretionary power. It can't be applied upon exercise of judgment. As these good attorneys have said, it's not enforceable for an act, quote, done by an official who has lawful authority to determine whether or not he will perform the act. You can't use mandamus to control an official judgment or discretion. Mandamus does not lie with the right. It's, quote, doubtful in Toussaint versus Memphis. And also, you can't use mandamus in, quote, any discretion concerning the doing of an act. But mandamus must lie to enforce an official duty as defined in law. It is a purely ministerial act. It is a summary remedy, Toussaint says. It is extraordinary, quote, extraordinary in its nature when the right has been clearly established. And I say I have a clearly established right in her duty. It is a command to act or obey. It is not controlling discretion. Discretion is within obedience. That's my main position here, is discretion is not apart from and in contravening obedience to the statute, Your Honor. It is within the statute, not apart or against it. Stand by just a moment, please.
Sure.
I'm not done.
Okay.
The other side rightly discusses the power of mandamus and its obvious limits, which I researched prior to coming before this court. Now, as far as being the propriety of using mandamus, it is justiciable, as I was saying. I have no other remedy, and in equity, when I'm being damaged, I go to the remedy that serves. And that is mandamus. I'm not asking, Your Honor, for anything that's shocking or weird or freaky or bizarre. I'm asking for a minimum in one sentence, no doubt it could be done, that the minimum is that Mrs. Barnes and Governor Lee obey the wholesome and good law and serve the public health. And in the interest of judicial economy, I would say mandamus is a great thing to get in your court. It may interfere with your routine child custody, probate, and contract cases, Your Honor. But because it's peremptory, it throws all your dockets out of way for 15 days or so. But then it's gone. It's gone. But that hasn't happened, and I find this a very dolorous circumstance. Mandamus, Chancellor Fleener, exists exactly for this case. This case is a perfect mandamus case. And Barnes and Lee don't say that mandamus won't solve the problem regarding their duty and my right. They're not saying it doesn't work. And they don't object that my demand won't stop irreparable harm. My demand will stop irreparable harm. In this case, Your Honor, empowers you and Chancery Court to bring and restore the status quo ante of our rights respected. And I would say that your authority and your, as Gibson Suits in Chancery points out, the 1955 edition, I believe I have, that Chancery handles in wholes and not in halves, and I want to take this opportunity to demand that the writ issue. And so finally, Your Honor, This suit is upon two respondents, Mrs. Barnes being the first one in this part of our hearing. They are acting outside the law. They're acting under color of law, either in their personal capacity or in somehow some misuse of their office. I'm not saying that the state has done anything unconstitutional. I'm not saying anything about the state. I am the state in this case. I represent the state of Tennessee. I'm the relator. I'm not saying that any law is unconstitutional. I'm not attacking any law, and I'm not attacking the state. I am the state. Rather, Your Honor, rather, the state of Tennessee on relation says that Mrs. Barnes has violated the sovereign state's legislative enactment. The state does have sovereignty. It cannot be sued, and Mrs. Barnes has violated the sovereign state's legislative enactment through its people. And that, Your Honor, is fraud. That, Your Honor, is irreparable harm. And they are continuing with the court's leave. With each day that there's no mandamus, the one sentence that says obey the law, we have irreparable harm. I'm defending the law. Your Honor, I'm defending the law, the good, honest government services it requires and it invites. Law and order, duty and honor, and representative constitutional government. I am personally injured. There has been no rebuttal by Mrs. Barnes on my injuries. If she wants to put me on the stand about my injuries, she can do that. But I've got all right there, five areas of damage. And the fact that we have many people damaged is a very dangerous position to take, Your Honor. And here's why. One moment. The case Spokio Inc. versus Robbins, 136 S, Supreme Court, 1540-194. That's a 2016 case. It says that the fact that an injury may be suffered by a large number of people does not of itself make that injury a non-justiciable generalized grievance under the requirement for Article III standing that the plaintiffs suffer a particularized injury. There is particularized injury, and in this boilerplate law work that these two lawyers have done, they're pretending that just because I represent the people as a whole and speak about them lovingly and caringly as suffering like me, that suddenly I don't have a damage. No, I have specific damages, and everybody who's listening to this hearing and everybody else in this state are suffering individually in different ways. Just because we have infamy writ large doesn't mean we don't have infamy. And I am specifically damaged and personally damaged, and they have a duty, Mrs. Barnes has a duty, Your Honor, that implies my right of relief today, for the writ of mandamus. And I think, thank you, Your Honor, I think that covers my motion to strike.
Okay, Mr. Tullis, I have one question. Could you give me the site of that Supreme Court case again, sir?
Yes, ma'am. It's Spokio, S-P-O-K-E-O, versus Robbins, R-O-B-I-N-S, and 136 Supreme Court, 1540-194.
All right, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Ms. Milling, would you like to reply on behalf of your client? Ms. Milling, did you mute your mic? Because we can't hear you.
I did, Your Honor. I did. I would like to very briefly respond. The petitioner, relative to addressing his motion to strike, says that the motion to dismiss should be stricken because it is improper because it did not address the factual claims in the petition. And it would appear that the petitioner misunderstands the purpose of a Rule 12 motion to dismiss, and that is to address whether or not a petition or a complaint is valid on its face, and it's not required to address the factual content. That is what we have both done here. So
the
is in default, that is incorrect, because a motion to dismiss is a proper response of pleading and acting in that effect, in that manner. As far as his damages, attempting to now assert he has a particularized injury, I would assert that on the face of the complaint, he has drawn his injuries as to be common with every citizen of the state of Tennessee. And again, reiterate the mask directive, what he brings this matter under the quarantine statute. A mask directive and a quarantine are two very distinct things, and he has brought this under the auspices of the quarantine statute, which is not how the mask mandate was brought, or the mask directive, rather. And I have nothing further, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Your Honor, I have more business, Your Honor.
All right. Let me talk. I will let you get to it. Let me say this. I'm going to take this matter under advisement and issue a written opinion on this motion to dismiss and motion to strike. All right. Now, Mr. Tullis, what's your other business?
Yes, ma'am. Or yes, Your Honor. There are two orders, two draft orders, against which I have written a motion of objection, and it is regarding the altering and amending of these orders. And I'm concerned in the way that I'm being treated by the respondents in this case, and their drafts, their legal work, and these draft motions, Your Honor, that you have already signed, are, and that was a pro confesso motion denial, and that was also default motion, your ruling on default denying my motions. In those, there is a trespass on this case. This is a case at equity, and the respondent pretends that it is a case at law. They've restyled the case. They've effectively trespassed on my case as state of Tennessee on relation. They've seized my case, and they've defamed me. And they've defamed me on these just a moment. As to my status as a man aggrieved, I'm a man aggrieved in this case, and they are pretending that I am something less, and this is holding me in contempt. They are defaming me. They are assassinating my character. They are abusing equity principles by restyling this case as one seeking damages. I'm not seeking damages. My references to compensation is under equity. You, Your Honor, have authority in equity to make things right. That's what you're not about damages. You're about setting things straight. And if there has to be some kind of compensation, well, that's entirely up to you. And my motion, my petition, was framed that way, as I point out. And I want these, I would like you to direct these two attorneys to halt their acts, making this a fictitious matter. They are fictionalizing the case. They're pretending that I'm seeking damages. They're pretending that I'm a bankrupt corporation. They're styling me. They're not referring to parties in the body of their type as respondents, and me, the relator, their petitioner, and the whole brief refers to Governor Lee. The whole brief refers to Mrs. Barnes. That also doesn't seem proper, Your Honor. This is not a law court. This is a court in equity, and I demand also. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Let me finish. The problem is that I do not have a corporate capacity. I'm not involved in any legal fiction, Your Honor. I'd like that to be part of the record. It's fair to say I'm sui juris and not pro se, and I'm a man aggrieved. I'm a private man acting in my private capacity. I'm a soul wrapped in a body, as C.S. Lewis says, and I'm on the land. I'm on the land, and to address this problem, Your Honor, with these lawyers reducing me and reducing my capacity into a bankrupt corporation, I enclosed in the exhibits my birth certificate in case there's any question about how my name is spelled. My name is not spelled all capital David, all capital Jonathan, and all capital Tulis. It's capital D, small Avid, and capital J, and small Onathan, and capital T, and lowercase ulis. And that is the proper way, and they can't, and I'm demanding that these people be required to not recast this case and recast me to reduce my standing. They are acting contemptuously of me, and I demand an end of this trespass, this re-imaging, as one of my arguments has in writing, re-imaging my case to mislead this court. Could you please issue a directive and corrective, Your Honor?
I don't understand why you said your name wasn't spelled with all caps. I'm just not following your argument, sir.
Well, the all capital name is for corporations and people acting in a commercial capacity. I'm not acting in a commercial capacity, Your Honor. I'm acting as a man, an aggrieved man. And it's not just a matter of the capital letters got stuck on the typewriter. There's a legal reason that people are capitalized. That way your tax forms, your banking forms, all commercial instruments are usually capital letters denoting the use that person is applying to himself. He is, when you're acting in commerce under contract or as a debtor, that brings that change in the styling of your name. Styling is not an irrelevant and trivial matter, Your Honor. And that's why my birth certificate is in the record, so that the other parties will recognize me as a man. I'm a man. And I'm not in any capacity, corporate, and not under any legal fiction, Your Honor. Thank you.
Your Honor, this is Ms. Klinefelter with the Attorney General's Office. If I can just briefly respond, as I understand it, I think the petitioner's complaint is with respect to the style of the pleading, in which I believe both Ms. Milling and I have styled it State of Tennessee, X Rel, David Jonathan Tulis, in all capitals.
We have done
the same with respect to Bill Lee and Rebecca Barnes. We have placed that all in capitals, which is customary in styling the headings on a pleading, a complaint, a motion, whatever is being filed with the court. But, Your Honor, I certainly have no objection. I mean, it's certainly not intended to reflect that Mr. Tulis was a corporation. If he was a corporation, it would require me to have put ink after his name for that to demonstrate that he was a corporation. But I certainly have no objection that if he wants me to style it State of Tennessee, X Rel, David Jonathan Tulis, and not put that all in caps, I'm certainly glad to do so.
And what about Mrs. Milling? Thank you.
If Your Honor, it does not matter to me one way or the order. One way or the other, I will accept your directive, whatever it is. As Ms. Klinefelter pointed out, it is customary. I don't think I have a case in here that I have not used all caps in a heading on a lawsuit. So, but
well,
whatever your directive is fine, Your Honor.
Well, the court styles the case in all caps for everything. And my order entered, I just looked back at my order entered December 8, 2020, and that's the way we styled it. It means nothing. It's just a formal pleading. Now, I'm going to get to the substance of your motion to object to the proposed December 2nd, 2020 hearing orders. What the court discerns is this is in effect a Rule 59 motion. The legal standard for determining a Rule 59 motion to alter amend is found in the case of Vaccarella versus Vaccarella, 49 Southwest 3rd, 307, Tennessee Court of Appeals, 2001, which states these motions may be granted when the controlling law changes before a judgment becomes final, when previously unavailable evidence becomes available, or when, for reasons, a judgment should be amended to correct a clear error of law or to prevent injustice. They should not, however, be granted if they are simply seeking to relitigate matters that have already been adjudicated. What the court finds is that Mr. Tullis's motions to object to the orders are simply relitigating matters that were already adjudicated. There is no new law. There was no new facts. And the motions to, and it's not to correct a clear error of law or prevent injustice. That's something you can take up on appeal, but the Rule 59 motion to object to the December 2nd, 2020 hearing order is denied. Now, let me see if I will have the, Ms. Kleinfelter, can you prepare that order as the prevailing party under our local rules?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. With nothing further to come before the court, that will conclude this hearing, and you will get my written order on these two, on what we heard today.
Your Honor, I have a question very quickly.
Okay.
My understanding was that the petitioner's motion relative to these orders addressed both orders, the one as to Ms. Barnes and the ones as to Ms. Lee.
Okay.
Do you want separate orders on those, or do you want Ms. Kleinfelter to wrap that all into one order?
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, because I was trying to get back through my file here to see if I had done two separate orders. Did I do two separate orders? All right, then I would like Ms. Barnes to address her separately.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And I just could not get back through the file quick enough. All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, this is Ms. Kleinfelter again, and I just have one additional request.
Yes.
And that is that all future filings by Mr. Tullis, if he could serve those filings on me instead of the governor, since I have now appeared as counsel of record for the governor, as it is, he has been sending those filings to the governor's office, and then it takes several days for those to make their way over to my office.
Yes, that would be appropriate. Mr. Tullis, you have to serve on the council, and that just helps you, sir, because that gets your motion's attention a lot quicker addressed. And she's entered an appearance, and the...
Okay. So you accept that, Your Honor? You accept that? No, there's no notice of appearance from her, and you accept that. So I'll accept it, too.
Well, yes, sir, she did. She, by following the responsive pleading. So,
yes, Your Honor.
You have that address on the order?
Yes, Your Honor, I sure do. And I will send all further correspondence to her. Understood.
All right, Ms. Kleinfelter, why don't you just give where you want this sent in on the record right now?
It is to Janet Kleinfelter, Office of Tennessee Attorney General, Post Office, Box 20207, Nashville, Tennessee, 37202.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. This concludes my telephonic hearing. My very best wishes for you all to stay well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Has left.
Sharon Milling.
Has left.
David Jonathan Tullis.
Has left. Has left. Has left.
Court reporter Sheila Wilson.
Has left. Has left.